Tonight on Big Head Mode, we are getting all up in King's Quest's business with the first episode of that came out the other week. We're going to be talking about that. I'm joined in the studio by Tegan and Lee from Geek Bomb. Guys, thanks for coming on. You excited to talk games?
Always.
Always and all the time. We're also going to be talking about our favourite childhood games or games that we want to see a remake to, as opposed to the games we don't want to see a remake to.
So many.
Which we might be talking about also. And of course, Gamescom is a thing that's happening. So we'll talk about that. That's all coming up on Big Head Mode 2 Triple R's one and only gaming show.
All of the things.
Hello and welcome to Big Head Mode. I'm Ben O'Brien, Tegan Lee. Let's crack into some games talk, guys. And first things first, I feel like compared to last week, I played a lot more games. Last week, we were very like, what have you been playing? Well, Witcher. It's Witcher.
It's been kind of the opposite for me because like I finished The Witcher on Monday and I'm in this big void of nothing and I don't know what to do. I feel really
empty. That sounds sad, but I know exactly what you mean. That post, like when a game is so big and it just like, just all-encompassing and it's suddenly gone. It's like a friend's gone overseas or something.
I think the worst thing that happened was when I thought that the game was over at a certain point in the game, and I remember you told me, Ben, it's like with The Witcher, it's like not when you think it's like... It doesn't end where you think it's going
to
end.
It's hard to say that without spoiling it.
And the worst part was, is like I had psyched myself up because I thought it was going to be the end, and then it turned out it wasn't the end. And by that point, I'd kind of had enough of the game, almost. And I was kind of a bit bummed out that I had to do all this stuff to get to the real ending, because like, I was ready. I was ready to put it behind me, and then it just kept going on. I'm just like...
Here's my question then. As someone who hasn't actually quite finished it yet, is it like with Lord of the Rings, how you think it ends and there's 50 more goddamn endings?
No, not quite. It's more just that, like, I feel like because it's such an emotional game, it's like you just prepare yourself for an ending and then it doesn't. So it's sort of like in your heart it's ended almost. It's
because the not ending is kind of the beginning of the end. Like, it kind of does the whole, it's like you are reaching the end of the game, so these like some side quests might not be available. So it does say that, but it turns out that it's the actual end is a lot further than that.
Yeah, actually, when you get that little message, there's a long way to go.
Yeah,
right.
There's a long way to go. And then it's weird too, because then after the ending, the real ending, you of course get the other ending, which is when you know the much vaunted idea of there being 30 different possible endings.
Really?
When you get the little sort of, you get like, it's like a classic college movie sort of ending, you know, where Brad and Josh went on to become Hollywood stars. You know, you get that sort of like,
here's, it's like the choose your own adventure endings.
Also. Yeah, actually, it's like what Mass Effect tried to do with their when they added it in after the complaints about their ending. So it's sort of like that. Here's what your decision sort of went on to do.
Oh, now I want to know what ending you got, Ben.
I know. Look, we should probably talk about this off air. actually, no, because you haven't finished it.
No,
so
maybe wait for me to leave. I'll just go, guys.
Fine,
whatever.
Yeah, look, if you could just go into that soundproof chamber.
I had TV for a month and I managed to finish the game before you.
Look, I'm moving. Okay, whatever.
You're moving. You haven't moved yet.
Mm-hmm. Most people move on a daily basis, Tegan. Not gamers, though.
Jesus Christ.
Stay sedentary. I this week was playing the Rare Replay bundle, which, you know, regular listeners of the show would know that I am a
Banjo
huge Rare
Kazooie.
Fan of Banjo-Kazooie, Conker's Bad Fur Day, even a bit of the old Perfect Dark. That's all there. And so that's been great. It's a really good bundle. It's good quality games. You do just really miss the ones that should be there. GoldenEye.
Oh, that'd be so good.
It's like the fact that there is no GoldenEye re-release, it would be so popular.
Yeah.
And Nintendo have the rights, but just not the platform to handle it.
Yeah.
Shall we say?
But they kind of tend to do that, those types of things, those game compilations. You're like, oh yeah, it's going to be really awesome. And it's always like the one game that you were hoping that would be on there.
Not necessarily true, Lily. So before the show, Ben and I were playing a little bit of the old Mega Drive bundle. And what were we playing, Ben? Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine?
Who won that?
Who won that over and over again for an hour?
Look, okay. Sometimes when you fall down a hole of losing, fall down a losing bean hole, you just can't help but keep trying to dig your way out of that bean hole.
Mm.
It wasn't happening. It wasn't happening. That was a great game, though.
So it's kind of like, me, not kind on of like the when you're playing play. Tetris at the last bonus stage.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay. So how has this turned into let's all dump on Ben's ability at playing games?
Much like maybe, the beans I dumped on top of yours.
Maybe just when it comes to games that involve moving colourful shapes down a into a weird like rectangle shape, I'm not good at it
because
I'm
out there spatial reasoning maybe.
Yeah, I mean you should see me parallel park. But I'm terrible at those games. I make up for it being real great at collecting jiggies.
Mm.
I'm just tops at that.
You were good at that other game we're playing as well. You're much better than I was.
Which
just before that new game out. Trying to prompt you? No.
Oh, of course. Yeah. No.
Jesus.
Well, you could prompt me by giving me the name of the game, Tegan, for Christ's sake. We were playing Yoshi's Woolly World on the Wii U, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Probably the most adorable game you'll ever play. It's like it's like you take Yoshi, already this adorable game character, and then make them made out of yarn.
That is a big call considering Unravel's.
No, legit,
out.
Dude. It was cuteness because overload. I nearly died. I turned into a girl for a moment.
But yarny. Yarny.
No, this game, it is. I mean, there was a level where you have to protect these tiny little baby yarn chickens, and I thought it would be funny if I picked one of those chickens up and threw them at a wall, thinking, hey, this will be funny. But when you throw them, it leaves a trail of cloud, and it's a platforming mechanic. Like, you then jump on the cloud. So the game actually encourages you to go into a nest,
take
out the parent, because and then you just take them with you, chuck them in the air. They die. They all die, but hey, you know.
But it's cute.
You collect that yarn faster. No, that's a really good game. And I was pretty skeptical of it because Nintendo just, they've got a track record for like, hey, guys, you know that game that we made 10 years ago? Here it is with yarn, you know. And that's what I thought it was going to. And I suppose, to be fair, it is.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
But it works. Like, stuff like that platforming level. Like
that was a beautiful
it's
level.
It's creative. It looks great. And, like, the worlds are themed, interestingly. Like, that whole sort of world hub is all themed on, like, cookies and weird stuff, which, you know, I'm always a fan of any food themed level in a platforming game.
Of course. And also, it does encourage our violence against your partner as well. So there was many a time where we were, you can suck somebody in much, or like eat them much like Kirby or Yoshi traditionally, and either poo it out or just throw him off a cliff.
It really is. Times. Like, that's the other thing Nintendo have just got down pat with their co-op sort of platforming games, is just to give you the ability to screw with your friend as much as possible. And I feel like this game takes to the next level because you block each other. Like, you can't physically walk past each other without bumping into each other. And a lot of the platforming involves standing on constantly moving really small platforms.
Mm.
So you're bouncing people off stuff. You're accidentally eating them and then turning them to a woolen egg where they will just plummet to their death. Or you throw them at an enemy. Use them as a weapon. It escalated. Things got real.
It did.
Real fast.
And then it's just so cute on top of it. Like, you don't know what to feel. Can you be that angry when everything's so cute? It's just insane.
Yeah, yeah. You sort of go, oh, I'm dead, but geez, that looks adorable. That said, Nintendo, if you want to make any new games anytime soon, I wouldn't mind that either, you know?
Everything out of yarn.
What are they going to do next? Yarn Metroid, just shoot balls of yarn at yarn space pirates.
Mass Effect yarn.
Okay, not Nintendo, but I see where you're going.
I don't care, but you know, EA, it's fine. They've got,
yarn effect. Yeah, that would be cool. Well, I mean,
capitalize on all those hipsters, like with their knitting and stuff.
You say that there is the grass effect thing, which probably links into our news. We'll get into after this song. But they, you know, you can play as the Mass Effect themed mech in Plants vs Zombies Garden Warfare.
Oh yeah, of course.
So it's not yarn, but gardening's kind of close to knitting in terms of a nice peaceful habit to have, right?
Sure.
So when I need one of Carla's gardening tips. Look, why don't we we'll go to a song, and then we can come back and we can talk Gamescom. This is Objection! You have to say it like that from Phoenix Wright. We'll be back after this round. Overruled. 2RRR. Damn it! Take that! We'll be right back. That was Objection from the Phoenix Wright soundtrack. We've been reminiscing on good old Phoenix Wright in here, haven't we?
We have.
Yeah, it's a shame we can't have him on the show sometime, because I feel like there's a lot of inaccuracies that he could definitely definitely clear up.
Maybe you should have him on a guest on bonus stage.
Maybe. Wink. I've got to say it, guys, because it's radio.
Oh, thank you for clearing that
up. Yeah. Not a visual medium. Let's talk Gamescom, okay? Because there's quite a bit that's come out. A lot of Xbox stuff as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which, as a, shall we say, majority Xbox gamer, I don't mind that. Especially since I think there was a lot of PS4 stuff at E3.
Yeah.
It seems like Microsoft saved a lot of their things for Gamescom.
Well, I think the big thing with E3 with Microsoft, I think, was more to do with the Xbox One in terms of, I guess, the backwards compatibility and the customizable controller. I think they probably focused more on that for that. And like you said, for Gamescom, they're probably focusing more on their titles. And
and speaking of backwards compatibility, we have a date now for that. It's going to be... it's going to be free for everyone, it says here, November 2015.
Oh, can't wait for Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm. Is that where you're going to go to straight away?
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
See, I'm all up for that, except I can't help but notice that they haven't announced Mass Effect 2 or 3 as available on... the noises you both just made.
It'll
be Dragon Age then.
Say hypothetically, they brought out a Mass Effect trilogy HD, or you know, I mean, even the original was HD, like a re-release. Yeah, I think I'd still rather that than just because having played the Rare Replay thing, it's sort of like some of it works backwards compatibly already. Like the versions of Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie and stuff like that. When you load them up on the disc, it just loads up the 360 version, and you play that through your Xbox One, and it really is just the 360 version. Like, it doesn't... even when you press the guide button, or like when the achievements pop up, they're 360 formatted achievements. So it sort of, it makes me wonder, you know, as much as I love backwards compatibility, it is literally the same games. Like,
yeah.
I want to be able to play Mass Effect 1 on my Xbox One, but I also own Mass Effect 1 on my Xbox 360. It's just in a different room. I could play that.
It could be even worse. Like, what I did is when I replayed the first Dragon Age, is I connected my Xbox 360 into the cable port.
Oh yeah, the
of
TV
my Xbox
in,
One.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like I was actually playing it on my Xbox One.
Jesus. And you could do that in multitask and have something else. Play an Xbox One game at the same time.
You actually can, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Play Dragon Age Inquisition at the same time and realize how much better Mass Effect is. So look, as well as that, they got away with that.
you liked Dragon Age Inquisition when it came out. Don't.
Yeah, you're the one that went hunting for shards.
I did. 20 shards later, I was already down in the Elder Steam game. But look, there's a few Xbox games that I want to talk about. The first one is Crackdown 3. They showed a demo, which I haven't even watched yet because I only realized that it's out now. But they showed a trailer, and there was a lot of the stuff I loved about Crackdown. You had those bloody orbs, which take your Dragon Age shards and shove them, because orbs are the best bloody collectible in any game ever. Hands down.
I haven't played it, so I could not possibly comment.
So, every orb, if you haven't played Crackdown, every orb is based on an ability. You start as this like pretty low-level agent. There are agility orbs, which are on high places. Every agility orb you get slightly increases your agility level. Each time you level up, you can jump like 10 meters higher. Mm. It gets to the point that you can basically jump like skyscraper level. And so it becomes this like awesome, you know, sort of carrot-dangling reward thing of like... You know, when you can jump 2 meters higher than you could before, you're like, yes, now I can get all these orbs and climb slightly higher buildings. By the end of it, you're just like kicking trucks into people and, you know, like flipping cars off roads and stuff. In this one, they've got this amazing looking destructibility where, so you have this huge city to free roam in, and it looks like every building is destructible. You can just kick a dude into a building and destroy the building. And that's all I've ever wanted from anything.
But then
life,
can you...
games, you know.
But can you go and help someone rescue their Druffalo, though? That's my question.
No. No. Or help someone put their wife's ashes.
The talking goat.
Oh, yeah, the golden little goat thing. Yeah. It's like, Lord, what's his name?
Yeah, that does actually sound Lord amazing, Wolseley. Though. That sounds awesome, and it, I regret everything.
No, it's in a you know, great co-op and just like a lot of fun. I'm very pumped for that. It's a strong Xbox game, and it's good that they're you know starting to get towards their better exclusives now with that and Gears of War and Halo coming out. It's sort of like, okay, you know, this isn't Sunset Overdrive. These are actual games that people like.
Yeah.
I mean, what about you guys? Was there anything that jumped out for you from Gamescom?
Tomb Raider. Always Tomb Raider. Always.
Did you see the demo or the gameplay demo?
Come on, mate.
That looks...
Don't insult me.
it's a hard one, that one, because it looks great, but also there's not really much new.
Yeah, I don't care. I'll take anything I can get, and it's exactly why I will be buying an Xbox One exclusively for that. And we could say it's because all my friends play Xbox, but it's all about Lara.
Come on,
let's be honest.
All your
coolest friends.
Yeah. Xbox. Yeah. And then...
Well,
and,
Lee.
Yeah. there was another trailer as well that came out, Mafia 3.
Oh, yes, it looks so good, that? Yes.
Really digging the 1960s setting in New Orleans as well. Mm. Getting away from that really, like, overwrought, cliched sort of, like, hey, boss, kind of wise guy mafia sort of world. It's It seems like a really cool setting.
Yeah.
You haven't seen any gameplay of that yet, obviously.
No,
but like,
the trailer's still really impressive, though.
Yeah. I'm hoping they get away from that Mafia 2 thing. Did you guys play Mafia 2?
Yeah.
That sort of like open world but not really thing that they had going on where it was like, yeah, it's an open world. There's nothing to do in it. And like the only thing to go to is your next objective. But, you know, if you want to go for a drive, check out these buildings. They look like buildings.
Yeah, it was really pointless. I'd rather just something like that. Not everything has to be open world. Like if you're going to do open world, do it really bloody well or don't do it at all.
Yeah, you're hearing us, games industry. Do it well or bloody rack off, all right? Hey, here's one that was a shock to me because I've been pretty underwhelmed by this game for a while, Quantum Break. Did you guys see the new trailer for it?
No.
All of a sudden, Sean Ashmore of Animorphs fame, or perhaps to a better known audience, Iceman in the X-Men film.
What's an X-Men?
He's the main character now.
Yeah.
When did that happen? In like every trailer before this, it's been some like generic McWhite dude with a receding hairline. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, hi guys, it's me, Animorphs dude. Bobby Drake, you know me. When did that happen? Really, it was like, okay. The weird thing is I was like, first of all, wow, that's weird that they've totally replaced it with another guy. The second thing was, I was more interested in the game instantly. Yeah. And I have no... Like, I don't care about Sean Ashmore at all.
Is it definitely him and not the weird twin brother that everyone forgets exists?
No, it's oh, what, the other Ashmore? Oh. It's me, Ryan Ashmore.
It's like somewhere out there he's listening to the radio show and just crying in the corner.
Oh, sorry, Ryan. No, but funnily enough...
Or just like his agent calling, hey, man, there's like...
You got mentioned.
There's some douchebags in Australia who forgot who you are.
No, he'd be like, hey, Ryan, man, great buzz about you. Everyone's talking. The name Ryan Ashmore is ringing in people's ears, man. Well, there's one community radio show down in Australia. Yeah, I've made it. I mean, speaking of weird brothers, though, it's like Dominic Monaghan is playing his brother.
Yeah.
And Littlefinger from Game of Thrones is playing the bad guy.
All right.
The last 2 years.
Aiden Gillen.
Yeah, that's the one. I'm glad you knew his name.
We do.
To me, he's just going to be Littlefinger, but hey. He's American again, which is a shame because his American accent, not great. Not great. Anyone who's seen the opening 5 minutes of Dark Knight Rises knows exactly what I'm talking about. But, I mean, like they've been really driving home the whole idea that game is like an interactive TV show sort of thing.
Yeah.
And now that there are actual actors that I know, it sort of makes me more interested. I don't know. Is that just me being totally superficial and being like, they're famous.
Yes.
I know them people. Okay.
I don't think it's being entirely superficial because I guess like when you see a familiar face, it kind of makes you...
It generates interest.
You can probably like maybe like in some ways maybe relate to the character more.
I guess I just connect to them slightly more now that it's not just that other guy looks so generic and like...
Because it's kind of like with when L.A. Noire came out and they did the whole like Uncanny Valley thing. Great. And then you were like, you were doing that case and you're like, it's the guy from Heroes!
Totally.
Yeah, although that got so distracting.
It really did.
When you're like...
Trying to think of who like, each person is like, I know that face.
Yeah, or because you're the main guy was already from Mad Men, so whenever it was another Mad Men actor, it was like, this is weird.
Oh, did you say Fallout, Ben?
No, I didn't. Bring it up. Bang, here we go. That was exciting.
Okay, so there's been a little bit of people... I've heard some whinging about the fact that what they showed at Gamescom seemed very similar to Fallout 3, but don't think I care.
How can anyone whinge about seeing anything from Fallout 4?
That's a great point, Ben.
So there were two key bits of information, right?
Yep.
That basically the game doesn't end after the... Correct. You finish the main quest, and that there is no level cap.
Yeah.
Which were two very annoying things in Fallout 3, and I'm guessing they're taking the Skyrim approach now.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's exciting.
Yeah, and as long as they don't do to us what they did with the Brotherhood of Steel expansion, where they just change ending completely. Yeah. Oh, no, you're not dead. It's fine.
It's me, Jim. I'm back. I'm alive. Dad?
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting too because a large part of Fallout 3, in terms of leveling up and the perk system, was just that you had that limited ability of like you had 25 levels, assuming without the DLC, you had to choose what perks you wanted carefully.
Yeah,
so it made those ones that sort of stacked like the extra experience and things like that a lot more valuable. But with in unlimited levels, it does make me wonder whether it's how that's going to change the perk system.
Definitely.
Are you just going to become this overpowered wastelander?
I'm going to be a god.
Flick a death claw and they go flying.
That's right. I'm just going to be going around the wasteland with my teddy bear shotgun and just capping bitches with my lack of level cap. Yeah.
What a baffling sentence for anyone who's just tuned in. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's definitely one to watch. And the other thing, the one more game is that we're all already excited for Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront, the Rogue, the Fighter Squadron mode.
Yeah, that looks amazing.
That looks, ooh, I'm there for that.
I think it was probably Brad, you're getting your shout out, Brad from Geek Bomb, said that it's probably going to look nothing like that when you play it. Don't care. I'm so excited for now.
Look, I don't know why people are so excited. It's like I've never really been into those types of games. It's like anything that sort of involves like getting into a vehicle and doing some stupid fighty thing. I think with me, it's kind of more my experiences with freaking Lego Star Wars, like all the bits where you're in like shooting at the TIE fighters and all that. Like I just hated those. And for me, I'm just like every time I see like footage of Star Wars Battlefront, I'm just going
Zero
back
Fox.
To that. And I'm just like, nah, don't care.
Look, I think as long as the quality floats somewhere in between the trailers and Lego Star Wars, I think we'll be somewhere in that spectrum.
Yeah.
But like that, the trailer for that squadron mode to me was just like Rogue Squadron on the N64 and having Han Solo come in and the Millennium Falcon and then at the very end, Boba Fett flying in. Oh man, Star Wars feelings.
It's not about the quality for me, it's just the gameplay in general. I'm like, I don't give a shit about going in a spaceship and shooting people. That's boring.
More for us, Ben.
Yeah.
More for us.
Yeah. Although, like, on that note, I do hope it is fun because traditionally the Battlefield games have had very sort of not complex, but like it definitely takes getting used to in their aircrafts. And I feel like for a Star Wars dogfight, it needs to be a lot more accessible. You need to feel like you can pull off sweet flips and, you know, sort of get in and out of, like, really fast situations.
Do a backflip, Ben.
Yeah, yeah.
Do a wheelie.
Yeah, you know, like, sweet burnouts. We call them sky burnouts. Us pilots. Look, we've banged on long enough. This is Chrono Cross Scars of Time from Video Games Live. We're going to come back after this and talk about games that we want remakes for. You're on 2RRR 88.5 FM.
Here we go!
Welcome back, gang. Let's talk. We're a gang now.
Alright.
We're a gang. BHM represent. Boom.
Come on, fist bump. I'm not going to bump that.
For those of us listening,
fist bump.
Okay, fine.
There we go. Oh, yeah, there we go. Bang. Now we're rolling.
I hate myself.
Yo, let's talk games, guys. All right? The game we're reviewing after this, of course, is King's Quest, a remake of a very popular adventure game series. And Tegan, I know you particularly are a huge fan of that series.
Oh, yes.
But it did get us thinking, you know, what about other game remakes? There are so many out there. Quite often, they're more reboots of franchises that are still out there. But there's a lot of games like King's Quest that are still out there from our childhood, from... And when I say childhood, generally that means the 90s or the 80s. You know, what do we actually want to see remakes of? And like, just to kick things off, I want to see Earthworm Jim come back.
Oh, yeah.
It's time. We're ready for Earthworm Jim. You know, 3D, 2D, 1D.
I don't care.
I'll take what I can bloody get.
Well, I don't know, because it could be very well like Sonic, and as soon as it went 3D, it just went...
I don't
Sonic
remember that. That didn't happen.
Nope. I've erased that.
These are the games that we want to be unmade.
This is a safe place, Lee.
That's a different show. I have a bubbling lava sound effect specifically for the shows where we choose games that we want to burn in lava.
Because I just remember like at Video Games Live last week, and when they had the Sonic segment, I'm just like, there were that many Sonic games made? Because for me, they pretty much stopped at Sonic and Knuckles.
Absolutely.
That montage was great until you got to about the game where Sonic turns into a werehog.
I'm out.
Nope. But look, What about you, Tegan? Do you have any games that you...
I do. Well, besides King's Quest, which is now, you know, that fantasy has come true, I do have a few on there. So one that I would love to see redone is Mickey's Castle of Illusion.
Oh, damn.
That was a good game.
One and two were both great.
They were both amazing games.
I was used to rent that out at Video Easy quite often as a kid.
Yeah.
God. Civic, that's how old I am.
Just to all the younger listeners, renting games was the thing that people used to do. God. You know, actually, fun fact, I used to work at a video shop. You can tell how well a video store is doing financially based on how many games they have. Because games are the most expensive thing for them to afford.
They were pretty pricey.
I always thought that was interesting. Like maybe a few years ago, going into stores, you go, well, they don't have many games. They've got a lot of games. Except now, if you go to a video store, you can tell they're doing well if they're open. Like, there's not many left, are there?
Yeah, and most of them have been amalgamated with Pie Faces. Like, they'll be open up.
Pie Faces are closing down. They went into, like, administrative, like, old franchises or something.
They've become, like, the Russian dolls of stores. There's, like, stores within stores just to try and keep it afloat.
Yeah.
No, but that's a great one. That was the second game, particularly, was a favourite of mine. Because probably the first co-op game I think I ever played, apart from Sonic, if you can call that co-op.
Yeah.
Where you had...
You had friends that had consoles as well?
Yeah.
No. No, come round in the house. Two controllers, bing, bang, boom. One person's Mickey, one person's Donald. Donald gets his butt stuck in holes. You need player one to kick him through. It was great.
I had another one, which we were all discussing before the show, which was an old PlayStation game called Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, that's a good one. And someone recommended that on
Cade.
Twitter before.
Cade.
Oh.
Yes, specifically too. Yeah.
Cortex Strikes Back, because
I'll take Warped, thank you.
No. Crash Bandicoot 2, I used to love the hell out of that game to the point where my friend and I, like, we both had the game, and we actually bought the PlayStation magazine that, like, especially had the guide to collecting all the gems and crystals.
Wow.
And there was one
gem and another
gem
thing
that
to the young
bugged.
Listeners, magazines are like, it's like paper, I guess, but you read things on it, and there's photos. Photos
demo discs, guys.
Photos, it's like Instagram, but
like
it's on paper.
Before the time of like fast internet, where like there was like walkthroughs available and things like IGN and stuff.
Cheat books. Remember cheat books?
Oh, yes. God. No, cheat throne numbers. When you'd
yeah.
Phone. Yeah.
This is fast turning into we're old. Yeah, Crash Bandicoot, though, I'm generally surprised that we haven't seen that come back in some shape or form or, you know. Like
I think he's a popular enough character to bring back.
It would be horrifying, though. I feel like it would be really bad if they did it, though.
I feel like platformers, though, it's that one genre that a lot of mainstream game companies are really reluctant to do. Like, I think it's why Banjo-Kazooie, which is really popular, why they haven't done anything with that because they just... I don't think they have any faith in platformers.
Yeah.
That's sort of like the indie domain, or Nintendo's got it covered.
Mm.
I personally would love a resurgence of that whole genre because there are so many great games just waiting to be exploited from our past. Tell you what, here's one that I have. This was a super obscure game, but it's so good. It was called The Haunting, right? Mm. I played this on the Sega Genesis, and the whole concept is that you played this punk ghost who died in his house and these rich snobs moved in, and you just had to go around. It was like sort of a top-down game from room to room, haunting things in the house to try and scare each family member out of the house.
That's awesome.
And it's great. If you go on YouTube and look at videos of it,
so it's like that
it
Simpsons
totally stands up.
From house, like,
it's exactly what it was like. It
Bad
was
dream exactly house. Yeah. Bad dream house. That's how sad I am.
Yeah. And it just worked. It was such a strong concept. And, you know, it was really well executed and sometimes genuinely scary. And there was this fun element of, like, trying to find different items in the house and seeing how you could reanimate it. Like, sometimes you'd dive into the carpet and just a pool of blood would just come out and they'd be like, yeah! Or, like, turn the piano into a monster, or, like, they'd open the microwave and, like, their family dog would just be in there. It was...
Oh, my God! That's dark!
It was really dark. And for a 90s game, too, there was something great about, like, dark games when it was really pixelated and, like, you know, I guess your imagination did most of the work.
Yeah.
But that would, like, they could bring that back totally as an indie game, a download game, anything just would be so easy to do.
I just want to play that now.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Or imagine that as a multiplayer game, like your friend trying to scare your friends out of the house.
Definitely.
Or something.
Yeah.
But how does that work, though? Because the friends will know it's you.
Do they, though?
Do they?
Yes, imagine a game like PT, right? Where, this is changing subject now, but a game like PT where another player is controlling where and when, like, ghosts show up or triggering hallucination points and stuff.
Oh, no, I would love doing that to you, Lee.
There is a game out there, I think, that's sort of like that, that is a multiplayer game where one person's the ghost and they hunt the other players and...
That's just your Friday night spend. That's a whole
lot. Yeah,
other
that's
thing.
True. That's me just following people at the mall. I forget what it's called. I watched a really good Let's Play. But it's like when you get them, you sort of, you're invisible to them and you hang out behind them. And when you kill them, that you show up on their screen as a jump scare.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That would suck.
That's awesome.
That.
It looks great.
Looks really fun. Yeah, so do you guys have any other games? I mean, like, you know, while we're here, what else are we remaking?
Tell you what I really liked, and it was cheesy as all hell, and I'd love to see them bring it back since they're bringing back a new season, is the old X-Files game that they had on PC. It was really cheesy
and
really
good.
What
about the PS1 X-Files game?
Was it the same one? I think they
came
out.
I've only ever...
Is it where Mulder and Scully were missing and you're trying to find them and everything?
Any PS1 era game based on a movie or a TV show.
Just any of them.
Like a Mission Impossible game on Nintendo 64 or PS1. Yeah, I'd be there for that.
Definitely.
Christ, I'm so glad that for the most part, the industry has sort of evolved beyond that point that every single movie has a game tied to it.
Yeah.
Because there were some awful games.
You know, that was
there.
A Michael Jackson Moonwalker game.
I do know that.
That was a great game.
It was actually really hard.
Yeah, it was really
hard. There was a game based on 7-Up. And I played that game, Cool Spot, and I bloody loved it. But we've evolved. We've moved beyond that point, guys. That's it. If anyone wants to remake Cool Spot, I think 7-Up, it's time that they had a resurgence. Their time has come. Look, this is Victory from the Captain Tsubasa soundtrack. We're going to come back after this and talk about... Yeah, what's it called?
Tsubasa.
There we go. You're on 2RRR 88.5 FM. And we are back. This is Big Head Mode, 2RRR's weekly gaming show, and Tegan's getting giggly. We're gonna review the first ep of five. I think it's five eps in total, right? That's the standard number for episodic games now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, King's Quest.
Yes.
And I went into it pretty open. You know, the only thing I knew about it was that it was kind of gonna be like a Telltale game.
And that I wouldn't shut up about it.
Yeah, you kept going on about it. I sort of went into it thinking, Monkey Island / Telltale.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
It sounds like I'm down on it, but, like, you know, that's what it was. Like,
yeah.
It was.
I think that's how I described it, anyway.
Yeah. But it sort of stands out well. It's sort of a similar quality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I get the obvious question I have is someone who's played the original, how does this compare to the original, which visually looked pretty different.
Slightly different.
Like, it
different.
Was 2D, right? 2D sort of pixel.
Like, I mean, it did evolve. There was quite a few games. Yeah. So, you know, compared to the original one, yes. Also, in the first four games, there was no voices. And even the original release of the fifth one, that was the second release where they actually made it a talkie. So slightly different.
Talkie.
I think it was great. It took me a while to really see it as a King's Quest game, because when I first started, it was pretty much like, I guess it was warming people up in terms of you just point and click, and it wasn't that hard. And King's Quest games are pretty renowned for getting pretty tricky with all the puzzles and everything. So I think I got about halfway through that episode before I felt, oh, here we go. This is King's Quest. So
it does sort of ease you in a weird way, doesn't it? Because the whole concept of the game is that you're basically playing a story that's being narrated from a grandfather to his granddaughter.
Yes.
And it kind of starts off, it throws you straight into the story and you...
Yeah, I remember you messaging me going, have I stuffed something up? What's going on?
It did feel a bit like you'd missed a cutscene or something, like an introduction, because you're just this guy climbing down a well and all of a sudden a voice is like, anyway, I went down the well, and you're like, who
what
is that? What is going on? But then it kind of sort of like, after that sort of introductory bit, it sort of pulls out a bit and you go back to the present day, I guess, or whenever it's the story's being told. And it's quite a touching story. Like it, in a short amount of time, it really endears you to the granddaughter.
Gwendolyn's fabulous.
Yeah. And you sort of get the sense that she's this young sort of maiden in, clearly living in a man's fantasy
she's
world.
She's so sassy, though.
She's full of sass. Yeah. She wants to be a knight, basically, and she's entered this fencing tournament, and it's kind of like her getting inspiration from her granddad.
Yeah.
From his stories before this tournament the next day.
Which, of course, is King Graham. Everyone who's a fan of King's Quest wouldn't actually know who he is. And kind of going back through, at least so far, partially some of the stuff that you might have played before, but from different perspectives in a completely non-linear way, it's amazing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and there are a lot of, you mentioned voice acting before. That voice acting is stellar.
Yeah.
It's really good. Even noticed old mate actor Wallace Shawn.
Oh, yeah.
From Princess Brides.
And they throw a little throwback in there as well. He's like, inconsiderate.
Yeah. Very, very tongue in cheek, the humor and everything.
Which it always has been, which I was really happy about as well.
Yeah. And it's always slapstick. Like, it's sort of, I think I'd describe it as it felt a bit like a Pixar film, or, you know, sort of a modern Disney animated film, kind of where it's sort of towed this line between touching and earnest, but then fun and light.
Yeah,
you know?
Even in the deaths, like, you'd have Gwendolyn, like, sassing you a little bit if you died. She'd be like, is that really how it happened? Like, before you really start again. It's really cool.
Full of personality.
Oh, yeah.
Full of personality.
And it's just visually stunning as well. It's this beautiful game, and the music is just so engrossing. And I would have to ask you from the perspective of someone who hasn't played it before, but me, it just dragged me right back into it. It was beautiful.
It definitely pulled me in.
Yeah.
And, and largely because of Gwendolyn, because of that sort of the context of knowing what the story was being told. And it also, like, all of the slapstick stuff sort of happened in the stories. So there's this implication that that's just the embellishment with the way the story is being told.
Yeah.
It's being told with that sort of fun sort of sense of, you know, someone telling a great tale.
Yeah. Especially whenever it came to the dragons as well. She's like, yes! She's so excited.
Yeah, you feel like you're right there along with her just getting told this really cool story. Mm. And also, like, in terms of the gameplay, I think because I was, like, I mean, my most recent experience with games like this is Telltale. I think I went in expecting something a lot more narrative heavy.
Mm.
And I'd say it's a lot more like Monkey Island. It's much more puzzle based
and
problem solving. And the narrative was quite, not light, but this isn't a big choice making sort of, although there are choices.
Oh, yeah, there are.
But it's not so heavily woven into every minute of the game.
No.
You're not going to be walking through a forest with one character for, you know, 5 minutes navigating through a million dialogue trees.
No, absolutely not. But yeah, your choices do matter, but it's definitely more the puzzles. And as I said, when I got about halfway through, I realized, oh yeah, this is going to be difficult. This is going to make me probably rage quit at some point, and I bloody love it.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's been such a long time since I had a puzzle adventure game like this that was so rewarding just from the puzzle aspect of it, you know? And I think that's a good way for them to go, like, because Telltale does have the market down on those sort of visual novel kind of games.
But this is also what King's Quest is, and it's what it always has been, and it's what I wanted it to be. And I was really worried in those, maybe the first hour, that they'd maybe dumbed it down a little bit, but no, I think it was just easing people in.
I think, like, the one problem I would say, or maybe not a problem, but I just found it a little bit grating sometimes, is that, like, I remember with classic sort of click-and-point adventure games, like, almost every detail was really valuable. You know, you'd you'd cross to the next screen and you'd already be scouring every inch of the screen to find stuff you could click on or interact with things. And I feel like that sense of just, like, savouring the environments is lost a bit in the modern version of this game, because there's a lot of areas where you're just walking for a long distance and there's just a lot of sort of almost filler environments.
You're also not as far into it as I am.
There was one bit early on where you have to go back and forth between two woods. And, like, my favourite thing to do in those sort of adventure games is just stop and press A on everything.
Yeah.
And just interact with everything and see what it is. And it kind of, like, it doesn't reward that so much in a lot of areas. It's sort of, in fact, sometimes you just get told off, basically, for, like, there's a scene where you get given a hatchet. And there's a lot of stuff you can interact with. And I'm like, okay, well, I've got this hatchet. I'll try and interact with stuff. Can I cut that tree? And then he's like, no, you don't want to cut that tree. There might be something in it. Then I went to cut something else. And he's like, no, you don't want to. And he gets to a point where he's like, look, I think that at this point, you just stop using the hatchet, okay?
I thought that was great, though, because it's just making fun of that whole thing of just, you know, you just hit shit, you know, when you get a hatchet. And also from previous games as well. I just thought that was such a fun poke at the industry in general.
It was fun, but it also, I felt like it was a sort of a double-edged hatchet, if you will, where it was like, yeah, but you've sort of given me the tools, like, I've still wasted my time going out and pressing A on things. You know, it's sort of like, yeah. But anyway, I definitely enjoyed it. I'd recommend it, I think. It's especially if the episodes can come out with regularity, which is something where Telltale just consistently screw up. If we can actually have a proper deadline for each episode so that we know when they're coming out, you know, every 3 weeks or whatever, then great.
That would be amazing.
But I'd say jump on it. Like, it's a really fun adventure game. Challenging. Definitely. It'd be good to play with someone sitting next to you, I guess, if you need the help.
Definitely challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, recommendation from you, I'm guessing?
Always.
Well, there we go. Look, stick around. We're going to play some messages, and then we're going to come back and say goodbye. This is 2RRR 88.5 FM. Well, that's us for another week. Tegan Lee, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
You guys at Geek Bomb, people can follow you at Geek Bomb on Twitter and Geek Bomb on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Or just the website,
geekbomb.net.
There we go. You can follow us at Big Head Mode 2RRR if you want to. And our website, bigheadmode.com.au. We got sketches up there. Also, the details for booking tickets to Bonus Stage, our monthly gaming talk show. Until then, I think you should stick around and listen to DJ Early Curly's Rad Tunes. He's going to love that I said rad. And we'll play you out with this song from Miracle of Sound. This is their song all about Ciri from The Witcher 3 called Lady of Worlds. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.